Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And this is Elements, our monthly bonus episode brought to you by our magnanimous patrons who support
the
show.
That's not the word you're looking for.
On a monthly basis. Thank you, Dictionary, Lexicon. What's a lexicon? I don't care. Visit patreon.com/NGPpodcast if you would like some more information about Lex Luthor, dude.
If we get one new patron signing up at $50 a month, I'll buy Dustin a thesaurus and make him actually use it before
Lex Luthor's Comic Con.
Yeah, so I know that you guys that are listening right now are really excited about me being able to learn more words. So come on, let's get that $50 donation.
Let me
get that by the end of the episode. We do have a Patreon page on patreon.com/NGPpodcast. That's where some of our devoted listeners can kind of go above and beyond. Instead of just listening and receiving content, they really take part in the production of this content. And they have helped us to be able to do this additional monthly bonus episode. In fact, this series, Elements, is a result of hitting one of our milestones there on our Patreon page.
And these Elements episodes occur once a month. They are a break from our normal episodes where we talk about retro games. In Elements, we talk about an element of any game, really any that we deem as excellent or quality and that we enjoy. And those five elements are gameplay, music, graphics, story, and characters. So we pick one of those elements. We hone in on one game, and then we just talk about how and why that game did that particular element well.
Yeah, and so for this Elements episode, we are narrowing our focus down to one single element from one single game. It's actually, guys, our second game to be developed by an independent studio. Do you remember which one we did for Elements?
Bastion.
Yeah. So just a little bit ago, we played Bastion and we talked about the music of Bastion for an Elements episode. And we made a big deal about it being an independent game. And it is a big deal. And I don't think that takes away from the fact that this too is an indie game. It was originally released in 2010 on Xbox Live Arcade and then later released on other systems. This puzzle platformer has the player guiding an unnamed boy through dangerous environments and traps in a style of play deemed trial and death. While it has minimal story, it is rich in tone, theme, and atmosphere. Join us in this Elements episode as we talk about the graphics of Limbo.
Now, the first thing that we need to talk about when we're discussing Limbo is the fact that this is not a 3D game. So it came out in 2010, and so you're thinking, or let's talk 2010. What came out? Red Dead Redemption?
Yeah, that's relatively recent. That's just on the, you know, at this recording, that's 8 years ago, which in video game terminology and when we talk about this podcast, that's really recent. That's modern.
Sure. Yeah, that feels like yesterday. Red Dead Redemption came out, StarCraft 2 came out, Mass Effect 2. So, like, okay, you have the sense of, like, the title, the quality, where we were in gaming. And, I mean, it was going quick. Games were coming out like that, like crazy. And here, we've got a very simple 2D platformer. And I think at the time, maybe you know, when this game was being developed, I can see their peers being like, you're going to want to, you know, you're going to want to go into like some 3D modeling. You're going to want to have some like detailed something going on here because, you know, look around you, look at the competition. And this, the creator, Jensen, his last name's Jensen, Arndt Jensen, was very adamant about creating this game and making it 2D. It needed to be 2D, it needed to be simple, and it needed to be a platformer. And we'll talk about some of the, you know, aspects of the graphics here, but I think what he was going at or getting at in doing that was wanting the player to not get distracted by like over the top 3D, top of the line graphics, and focus on other parts of the game, which is a very interesting choice.
Honestly, I feel like in some of the modern games, not that we're against modern games, some people that like retro games, like only like retro games, and they're like, past this year, we don't do that. But that's not us. We enjoy modern games. But this like incessant competition to compete on whose graphics are better, which one's more realistic, has actually led to more distraction in gaming in some regards than otherwise. I mean, you mentioned Mass Effect 2 earlier. I know that when the newest Mass Effect game came out, beautiful graphics, but some of the facial animations, everybody made a big deal about it being so terrible. And I just feel like sometimes going that extreme causes more distraction of what the game is trying to accomplish.
Agreed.
It does, and it's harder to deliver to some degree too. When like, there's a practical issue of like, you're an indie studio and you're wanting to create this really beautiful, tone-heavy, atmospheric game. And you can do that by going like way in depth with just like a beautiful environment. But the bar is then so much higher. I think of it like this. Do you guys remember when television made the jump to HD like for the first time?
I thought you were going to say when television came out.
No, no, I'm that old. But you
I remember that. I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden you could like see the pores on the newscaster's face. And like if they did a poor job of the makeup, you could tell. And like some folks were just ugly when you actually could see them in all their little details. And there's something to be said about just saying, like, we're going to keep this simple, not just in look, but in terms of, like, even the experience of the game. Keeping it in just two dimensions frees them up to focus on the stuff that was most important, and that's making something that's really pretty.
And so we ended up with this resilience of 2D gaming, and I'm glad that they chose to go that direction, because fast forward 5 years to now, we have Shovel Knight. I mean, there's like a resurgence of platformers, 2D platformers and indie games. And I honestly think that Limbo had a really major part in influencing future games.
And I don't know the future, obviously, but I just really hope and am going to hold on to and believe that 2D is always going to be here to some degree.
Too.
That as games continue to progress and as design continues to progress, that there will always be a place for 2D, because although it is, you know, simplistic, Kenny, you had mentioned that or some, it, that doesn't mean that there isn't artistry put into that. This, it's just a different kind. It's not the hyper realism, but in not doing that, they free themselves up to focus some of their design in other areas.
Yeah, and one of those areas where they chose to make some really interesting design choices is in how they did this color scheme of this game. I think something, if we're going to talk about these graphics, that we've got to point out for people who haven't seen it, and this is a great game, everybody ought to play it, I think we'd all agree on that, but if you don't play it, at least go watch a little bit of gameplay. There's a reason we're talking about the graphics here, and it's because they look amazing, but they don't do it by being flashy, and that's not just in the number of dimensions they chose, it's also in this fact that they go with a black and white, really simple, classic, kind of, I don't know, sort of film noir style of presentation.
And film noir is, I've seen people have differing opinions here of like, is this film noir or whatever? What is that? Is that 40s, 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s, somewhere in there? Kind of where
it's
was
sort of that era
of movies and stuff like that. That wasn't just It's not just that it's black and white and grayscale like that, but even in the there's something about the tone to be said too that lends it to being something that you can compare to like film noir. Yeah,
absolutely. Sure. It's got some really soft elements and some things that really just feel like that. And again, descriptions are hard, and they go with some things, especially content wise, that aren't sort of that classic film noir take. But either way, they go black and white, and it gives it this sort of automatic, antique, classic, aged look, which I think is good. And it also immediately sets up that this world that you're in is really, really bleak. Now, you find that out in more ways than just how the game looks almost immediately. But I love that the black and white nature of it helps to just tell you, like, this is an ugly, barren place from the very beginning.
And you might be thinking, like, okay, black and white, that's, you know, easy. Like, you think of TV, right? And you're like, black and white, that's a downgrade. But think of the challenge here. So a video game, you need to be able to tell what's going on in a video game, especially a 2D, I mean, a 3D one too, but like, things can get lost really easily in a straight up black and white game. It's black and white the whole time. So the fact that they were able to, like, pull this off with the different shades of black. So you have like black, and then you have like grayish, and then light until it gets like white. Is really,
and then even like a glowing kind of white as well.
But still white. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't easy. I think this was actually a challenge for them. It might have been easier to go with a color scheme of some sort.
Yeah, sure. I think that here would be a perfect time to actually kind of reference the title of the game. You know, we're not going into story, and again, story is something that you discover in this game. We can't really talk much about music because most of what you're hearing is ambient noises.
Right.
There's a single character for the most part. I mean, you could argue there's some other characters. However, the game is called Limbo, and no, it's not a game about being at the roller skating rink and going around the circle and then like bending over backwards to get under this bar. Although that would be a fun game.
I wouldn't play that. I wouldn't play
that. You know, there's got to be a Limbo video game out there.
Yeah, the worst.
This is about the in-between. You know, like maybe after one dies is kind of what Limbo, I think, customarily is. And that you spend time in this in-between space before you move on into eternity, whatever that is.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the going black and white helps communicate all of those things. For me, it also helps a little bit with just even suspension of disbelief when you're doing sort of this animation style graphics, and they're doing a very sort of artistic animation style graphic. It's not, you know, like cartoony, but it's clearly animated, and they're going for pretty in the middle of this black and white and bleak environment. But when you're doing that, the fact that it's black and white and just sort of this neutral palette, to me, even helps with my suspension of disbelief. Like, I didn't feel like they were trying to make it somewhere real. Because of the things they did with the look, I felt like wherever this place is, whatever is going on in this limbo, like, that's how it is. And it's not here, but I don't know where it is, and that's okay. I don't know. That's maybe a vague concept, but I really like that. I like the feeling in it.
Yes. I also think, to add on to that it produces this concept of loneliness, like utter, like you're alone in this world. And you find other life to some degree throughout your journey through Limbo, but it's this cold and lonely and eerily beautiful presentation that is primarily done through just that black and white. You've got, again, you've got some shine to some things. You've got, it's not just this matte black and white. You've got so many dimensions of that black and white and that grayscale, but so much so that you could you could play this game and you should play this game, but as already mentioned, if you're able to just watch this game full screen, lights off, sound up, like that's going to also be an enjoyable experience because even though it is just black and white, it is hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah, I'll just briefly mention that it also works well with some of the motifs they do throughout the actual game in terms of sort of light and dark, and there's some gameplay elements that they kind of work into some of that we won't get into. But it just really lends itself to everything that they were trying to do. They could have told the same exact story and they could have colorized it and it could have been pretty and still worked. But in this case, for this specific game, I think it works even better with the choice to make it black and white. And that just shows how thoughtful they were about how they wanted to make this game look.
Not only is the game done in this grayscale black and white type coloring, it is very much so and intentionally minimalistic and ambiguous. So that's kind of what I'd like to talk about just a little bit, and that they intentionally go minimalistic, not only in color, which we've addressed, but also in style that allows the player to focus their attention on gameplay, and you don't have much going on the screen at any given time. You've got a foreground, which is typically just this huge dark shadow of something. You've got these beautiful backgrounds that you'll never be able to go to. It provides some depth there. And then all you have really is your character and then whatever trap that you have set out before you. And so the first half of the game is kind of set in a wooded area. A lot of trees, even a treehouse at one time, some water pits, some hills, a lot of those things. The second half of the game is more in a factory type setting. You've got a lot of mechanical things going on. But in all of these things, the foreground, the background, the models of the characters, the traps, you're only seeing them again as shadows and outlines. It's this again, you're not going hyper realistic, but kind of to Kenny's point earlier, you're not having to really you're not having to suspend disbelief even with those things. And I think it's because of choices like this where they don't give you too much, they give you just enough to paint a pretty picture, to allow you to play the gameplay, and then to keep it ambiguous and minimal so that you're not distracted by unnecessary things.
Yeah. I think it goes back to like how this game was meant to be experienced, like what the creator wanted, and it's the lack of complexity in the graphics is almost like a whole element on its own. Like it's intentionally not there, but it's so not there that you're drawn in. Like I'm glued when I watch this game, when I play it, I'm like glued to what's happening around me. And it's not like high intensity, I'm having to dodge bullets, that kind of platforming. It's like I could sit still for like several minutes, nothing would happen, nothing bad would happen. It's just there, and like it really puts the player in charge of how they want to experience this game. And like I'm really glad that there's like nothing to distract you from like all the other elements. And it's hard to only talk about the graphics here, but like just the lack of detail is enticing.
And it's intentional. It's not lazy. And I'll tell you how I know this, because ambiguity is not something that you're able to accomplish easily in certain games, intentional ambiguity, because you want to have detail, you want to make your game quote-unquote pretty. But this unique art style here has a lot of intentional misdirection. There are times in which its minimalism and ambiguity hides something that's going on or about to go on from your eyes,
right,
and it intentionally misleads you. So, for example, sometimes you would think that you'd see something and then you'd get past that chasm and there would be nothing over there. Did you see it or did you not? That's trying to tease you in that way. One other example is that sometimes you would think you would see something just friendly kind of lying on on the ground and it ends up being deadly, or vice versa. Sometimes you think you end up seeing something that is morbid, and when you get close, you're mistaken. It was something else entirely. Mm-hmm. And they do that by this minimalism and by intentionally keeping things ambiguous and keeping things in the shadow. So that, again, like one of the early things is that there are bear claws? That's not what they're called.
Bear traps.
Bear traps that are on the ground, but it melds in with some of the grass and some of the reeds that are completely passive, like aren't going to hurt you one bit. And so you might just be, you know, just running kindly through this, especially when you start the game, you don't know what's going on. And so you're just, everything's happy. You're just running down this path, and then a bear trap comes up and completely demolishes your character, but you never saw it in the first place.
I know we've already mentioned it a few times, and so I'll try my best to really stay on topic here. But I think you hear all of us struggling because the way they did these graphics are so related to how they go about doing this sort of puzzle-driven, you know, gameplay, that it's hard not to talk about how these things affect it. But I will just say, the fact that it feels fictionalized, you know, that there is this ambiguity that, you know, that stuff can be sized really unrealistically, and that's okay in this world because it doesn't feel real, just totally adds to the tone and the way they're telling their unique story. And it's neat that they didn't have to be heavy-handed to get there.
Like, again, I think all of this is intentional. Like, you can go online and search, like, Limbo Theories or Ending Explained. You're going to find hundreds of different articles and message boards of people trying to figure out what this game actually is about, what the story was. And this lack of detail and this lack of visible description was an intentional decision to keep the gamer guessing as to what the story is all about.
Now that we've talked about the scenery a little bit and what you're actually looking at, I want to talk about who you're controlling. So the player here has control over the boy. It doesn't have a name. Again, you're just kind of thrown into this story, into this game, and it's a boy. It's like a silhouette, quite literally, of a boy. And there is something unique about him, though. His eyes are glowing. Kind of like what Dustin was talking about earlier, where it's like a white glowing. So his eyes are there.
Which the way that you're introduced to him is amazing. Like at the very beginning of the game, everything's completely dark, no music, wooded scene, tall grass. And like it's introducing you to the world's like grayscale aesthetics. And then before you probably notice this kind of lump in the shadows, you see these two glowing white dots appear, and then they blink. And then a moment later, this little boy sits up.
Yeah. And there's so many good things about that. So one, it's open to interpretation. Again, the fan theories going on and all that. So I think it means he's alive, personally, just say that. And everything else in this world is either dead or dying. And two, it lets the player know that, okay, I have control of this character. Because otherwise, like, he would get lost in the scenery. Because he's black and just like the trees. And you really need that visual cue. And so it really lets the player feel in control of something that looks very similar to his surroundings.
I think what's also key here is that it is a boy. It's not a full-grown man. It's this tiny boy that, although it's very minimalistic in his detail, you don't see anything but an outline, you can tell that he's like wearing this long sleeve t-shirt. He's got these skinny legs. He's got this big head that kids mm-hmm. typically do. But all of these things help you, the player, to empathize with him and to want to protect him. He's got these ragdoll physics that when he mm-hmm. does fall or when he does get hit by something, like it, you don't want that. Like it hurts you too. And so you want to do everything. And Kenny, you had mentioned it earlier, everything in this world is larger than you. And I don't think that's just going like, you know, trying to be unrealistic or whatever. I think they're helping to distinguish between you, the character, being the small, helpless, lonely, all by yourself character, mm-hmm. and then this big, scary limbo world around you.
Yeah, there's something missing about that. Like, everything being a little bit too big, a gap being a little too far where you have to, like, finagle something around to get closer to it. All, again, intentional. And yeah, it is important that it's a boy. It, like, it says, uncertain of his sister's fate, a boy enters limbo. That's all you have about this game when you started. So you are a boy, and they pulled it off too. Like, yes, he's short and small like a boy, but his movement is very boyish in nature, if that makes sense. Like, he's appropriately awkward at times when he's jumping or running. You can tell he kind of, like, slouches when he walks. And again, that's got to be so challenging to pull off when you have no other visuals other than a silhouette.
Yeah, they did a great job with those animations. I'm glad you brought them up, because they're amazing. And immediately you feel kinship with him, just because everything is so big and foreboding and unknown. And it means that as he's getting to these difficult challenges and trying to get over them, every time you can't, it kind of just breaks your heart a little. And that's just because they designed the character so well, you know.
We're not talking about gameplay, but with animations, I have to say one, a gameplay thing, in the sense that you can only, you know, walk, run, jump, and then you do have an action button, meaning, like, it usually uses his little hands to grab onto something and to maneuver an object in the world. But with that, he's got different animations for his jump, for his like, he's got a little skip like walk, he's got more of a large leap, even when he's climbing up and down ladders, his little hands going. So that, I think all of this is done with great intention, but while they don't give a lot of detail to the surrounding world, I feel like even with his animations, they intentionally took time to do a lot of detail there with how this little kid would be animated. And I think it helps you, the player, again, empathize and connect with this little boy.
And with all of the limitations that this game is working with that we've already talked about, I say limitations, again, very intentional artistic style choices for how they're presenting the world to you, I think they also did a really amazing job with how they made the things he encounters look. Like, he's running into obstacles and having interactions with these puzzles all the time. And I think they designed some of those just so thoughtfully. I think, first of all, of the kind of first moment in the game where you realize things are a little bit darker than they've seen. You've maybe already kind of messed up in the gameplay at this point and died. You'll die a lot in this game. That's not a problem. It's expected. But this is the first time that you won't have just died from missing a jump or falling into water, but you come to the first thing that is clearly an enemy. And the visuals here are so striking, because they went with something that immediately invokes terror in, I'll say, everyone, because I'm a grown man and I put myself in this list. I think everybody who acts like they're not actually a little bit afraid is lying.
You haven't said what it is.
I know. I'm building suspense.
We get it.
I'm choosing We're ambiguity suspended. And minimalism to paint
Stop
a picture.
Stop being so black and white. No, it's, that would be great. Stop being. Just tell us.
This enemy is, like, long-limbed and lanky, and you come to these giant spider legs sticking out. You don't even see the whole spider at first. And you realize this world is going to get crazy.
If you do not have arachnophobia before playing this game, yeah, you certainly will after. It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, and Kenny, you just mentioned they don't show the whole spider. They only show, like, the three or four legs sticking out behind a tree on the right side of the screen. And that is more terrifying to me, of just, like, skinny, like, legs just poking at you, and it's just creepy.
Absolutely. And we talked about the animations they did for him. The animations they did for the spider, for having nothing to use but long, skinny limbs, the fact that they were able to draw something that was so absolutely terrifying that had so much personality and that felt so, like, intelligent and malicious and, I don't know, cunning from just a couple of appendages waving around speaks really highly to how they designed this spider.
That's very, very true. And it's your first sign of life and your first sign of, like, absolute death. Like, Kenny, you had mentioned, you can die before, most certainly, but it's complete solitude before then. No other life whatsoever. This is the first thing that's moving and actively trying to hurt you. And so it is already scary in and of itself, but then they decide to go with a spider, and then they decide, again, you're just seeing shadows and stuff, so... I think one of the tactics here is leaving things to the imagination, because your brain and my brain can do a lot more danger than what someone can just do with graphics alone.
Yeah, they really can.
Honestly, it was such a good choice, because when I first started playing the game, I felt like, okay, this is eerily beautiful. I'm in a forest. Like, I can do this. This is beautiful. And then you see that, and immediately I turned from, like, this is a beautiful forest to I'm in a pit that I need to get out of, and I'm so scared. Like, and that sense of terror, like, from the boy's perspective, but also, like, can you say it as an adult, like, oh my goodness, there's so much imagination to be had here, and I really, it was such a genius thing.
It immediately goes from dream to nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, instantly. Yeah. And the size of the thing relative to you. And then what I love, and I think there's probably some different thoughts. I know people talk about the spider. I have a sense that there's actually a couple spiders that you interact with.
No, I think that it is the spider that's coming back. So as you continue, that spider then crawls. You injure it a little in the first time, and so it's limping towards you in future times.
It stalks you.
And it stalks you, which is even more terrifying. And eventually gets you to where it webs you up for a little, like, you get actually stuck in the game, and then it wraps you in its web. It conquers you, wraps you in its web, and then for the next 10 minutes or so, you play as the boy, but completely mummified in the spider
it's
web.
It's hilarious. His little hop animation when he's all wrapped up,
wonderful,
trying to escape the clutches of this spider is great. It's so well done.
But to finally be caught by that terrifying spider, and again, its legs are spider legs, but they're also like these blades. And so when they do get you, they're not just like kicking you. They are stabbing right through you. And so, again, just this image of complete terror, being a spider alone, but being the kind of spider it is, and some of it left up to your imagination, just absolutely terrifying. I think even a good representation of why I would say that this game in some ways even, like, haunts me more than some of the more stereotypical horror games that are just, like,
just
jump
sort of
scares.
It's just kind of visceral. Like, it just gets you at a kind of gut level. And a lot of that's because of how they design things. I do think it's also worth mentioning that's maybe the sort of most classic obstacle enemy that you get. But when you're talking black and white and having all of the puzzles that you have, and you also run into some other enemies that are sort of humanoid. And I don't want to tell too much of sort of the story there, because I think people should discover this game for themselves if they haven't played it. But it could be so hard to even just practically set up some of the things that they do and make them pretty, and yet they somehow do. Let me talk for just a second about the electric floors. Like, stunningly beautiful, this simple little animation that just clearly indicates if you step on this, you're going to die. And that'd be really hard to do with just a couple of colors and in a way that communicates the danger clearly, but that matches the aesthetic, and yet they nail it over and over again, from the size of the boxes and the physics of stuff falling to the giant things in the world and cogs moving and being ready to crush you. Like, the look of things is just so big and so thoughtful, and I don't know, it's just really, really good. You always understand what to do without any instructions. You know, there's no text in this game, and it's all because all of these obstacles were designed to be really clear, even in the world that they created. And that's no small feat.
So the last thing that I'd like to focus on here is the just gruesome death animations.
I feel like we maybe should have talked about this first, because part of this game.
I think we've done a good job, because we've addressed that death is a part of this game, very much so. Like, and we've addressed some of the traps, some of the puzzles, some of the dangers that one might face, but we really haven't gone into detail about what happens when you are punished by making bad decisions. So I think we've mentioned at the forefront, but this game is really trial and error, and so you're going to die a lot. If you don't want to play a game where you die, don't play this game.
I want to say, that sounds terrible, and for me would normally be a turnoff.
Right.
Like, it really would.
Right.
But it's just sort of baked into the mechanics of how you figure out puzzles.
Well,
And some of them are pretty clear, and you can navigate them without it. But, again, they just design around it really well, and so it's not as bad and punishing as it sounds. It's the experience.
You get tons of checkpoints, and so you don't typically have to go back extremely far. That's one of the frustrations with me. But so we don't get too deep into gameplay there, I do want to address some of the deaths that you will face, and then kind of paint a picture of what happens when you do experience these deaths, because some of them are relatively basic. So we've mentioned one of the more common ones, and that is stepping into a bear trap, or having a bear trap fall onto your head, or a swinging bear trap like slamming into you as you're just, you know, walking in the scenery. You've got many different ways to die by this bear trap, but when it slams down around you, first of all, it's pretty much your entire size. So it's not just getting your foot. You're this little boy. It's getting your entire body and completely thrashing it apart. But the thing that's nice is that since it is grayscale, since it is minimalistic, it's not a Mortal Kombat here. We're just seeing pieces of the boy fly across the screen.
But I was going to say there's no blood, but some of these death animations are disturbing,
there. It's just not like gratuitous and red, but
I
like
mean,
he
his
dies
head pops off
pretty violently.
Well, even when you're attacking the spider and you're fighting the spider, I don't want to give away some of those things, but when you hurt the spider and you're damaging its leg, this glowing white life, you know, maybe blood, does squirt out of the... It might be the first time we've used the word squirt on our podcast, but...
Yeah, first and last.
I doubt it.
It does squirt out of that enemy. So, yeah, again, maybe not... I don't know how you define gratuitous or whatever, but it's not hyper-realistic again, so I think they can get away with some of those things and it not be as disturbing. However... that bear trap is just the beginning.
Yeah. Go through some more of the list.
It gets a lot worse than that. So there are so many ways to die in this game, from a spike pit to drowning to being crushed by a boulder. Those are some of the basic ones. Later in the game, you come face to face, very literally, with these rolling razors. Like, just think huge mechanical razors that are in the ground coming at you. And if they and when they hit you, again, you'll lose your head. You'll die, and your boy, whatever, it's cool because it's not always the same animation. Whatever part of the boy hits the spike or the rolling razor, that's the part of the boy that will be severed and flung. So I just like that it's not just one death animation, but they've got multiple different pieces to it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's so... everything, the theme here, intentional, if we haven't used that word a million times, whatever, it's like they went to the length of making multiple death animations and making them very like the physics of them very realistic and stand out for sure. It's not just a, oh, you died. And also, this is a boy. So even though there's no blood, and even though like that's part of video games, I was still disturbed when this little boy died every time. And
absolutely, there's this sort of like innocence there that makes it that much more
right. Yeah, and
heavy.
This reminder of death, 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 I think again just adds to like your interpretation of this game, and it can be different from player to player. But I think that's what's so beautiful about this game.
So all of that to say, it sounds dark. and it kind of is, but it fits that tone. And so even though we're talking about how well they do this sort of gruesome death thing, it really does fit this whole fictional, larger-than-life, nightmare dream limbo thing that's going on. And it's heavy, but it's never like, oh, you're not going to like this game because it's violent. At least I don't think so. It's almost endearing, and you get to come back from death and keep trucking, and it just sort of works. And I know we mentioned a whole bunch of things, but this game was just cohesive. Everything they did, from keeping it simple in 2D to choosing to be black and white and keeping things simple, to adding clarity with how the obstacles worked and still giving them character, I feel like they just nailed. And there's a reason we did this game, and it's because the graphics are on point, and it's beautiful, and it's truly a work of art.
We would really encourage you to play it. It's not a retro game. It's one of the cool things about Elements is that we get to talk about other more modern games. But in many ways, this has a lot of aesthetics of a retro game. Very simplistic, minimalistic. We talked about a lot of these elements. You can find this game for less than $10 on Steam, on many other, on even some of the consoles. I believe it's even come to Switch just recently.
It's Nolan, on there.
So we could play it on our little Switch,
yeah,
boys.
We could.
But beautiful game for so many reasons, but the one that we decided that probably stands out more than the rest is its graphics. We truly hope you've enjoyed this bonus episode, Graphics of Limbo. We did thank our patrons at the top of the episode, but as always, we want to give a special shout out to our producers, which is Zion and Gamberino. Thank you guys so much for supporting us, for your love, longevity, and lingering.
Squirt.
Thesaurus.
Until next time, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm the boy.
And this has been another bonus episode of New Game Plus.